if you want to be a teacher, or I know earlier we use a word like guide or educator or coach with others to help them with these decisions, then this is probably going to be a great career for you. If instead you're more interested, which is nothing wrong, but if you're more interested in building a valuation model in Excel and tearing through 10Ks, then that, you know, then you have to find your home there.
Hey, Dominique here, and in this episode of Conversations for Financial Professionals, I speak with Stephen Schiestel about a new generation of financial planner. You know, the career of a financial planner is very much so in demand and can be very rewarding. However, there are many things you need to know before pursuing this as a goal. So Stephen and I, in this conversation, discuss how the relatively young profession of financial planning has changed and the skills necessary to be successful in this industry. And trust me, it's not what you would probably guess. We also touch on how he's building the financial planning program at Michigan State to prepare students for all of these challenges within this career. He's obviously doing a great job since 80% of his students are finding jobs in the industry. That's right, 80%. I really enjoyed this conversation with Stephen and the insights that were revealed inside of it, and I'm sure you will also. So without further ado, let's get to the conversation. Welcome to another episode of Conversations for Financial Professionals. I'm Dominique, and today I have Stephen Schiestel. You are the Frederick S. Addy Professor of Practice in Finance at the Eli Broad College of Business at Michigan State University. Go Spartans!
Yes, you received, go green.
You received your MBA in 1998 from Michigan State University and a BBA in Finance from the University of Michigan at Flint in 1991. You also teach undergrad and grad students in securities analysis, valuation, financial planning, and wealth management, along with corporate finance. You're the director of the college's financial planning and wealth management programs. You have won several teaching awards, including winning the Executive MBA Teaching Award 4 times. And prior to coming to Michigan State, you held management positions in the wealth management division of Citizens Bank, now part of Huntington Bank. Welcome to the podcast, my friend.
Hey, thank you for having me. Looking forward to our conversation today.
Yeah, definitely. It was kind of weird. I don't normally do this because I'm pretty good at remembering a face and even a name. But when I reached out to invite you to this, you were like, "Don't I know you from AGC?"
Exactly.
I guess so. So such small circles this industry runs in when you get to know people. So I'm really eager to have this conversation also with you about what I would call a new generation of financial planner. But from your seat, you are entrenched in the day-to-day of academia with undergrad and grad students, like learning about this profession and learning about financial services and all that it entails. And even before we started, we were talking about just the mentorship programs that you've created with the financial services community, which I think is just a great thing. So let's start with kind of your origin. Looking at your resume, I'm going to imagine that you're somewhat of a finance nerd like me because you went to school for it. But how did you land in this profession? What took you down this path?
You know, that's a great question. You know, so I'll tell students when I kind of do my introduction at the beginning of every term that, you know, I went into undergrad as a history computer science major, thinking at that point when you're 18 years old and you have this thought that I have my entire future charted out for me, that I was going to be like a history teacher. And I think it actually was an econ. So I never had an econ class in high school, but I had an econ, like an intro to econ class. And the professor explained basic economics and also tied it into, as the schools of thought, what was going on historically. So it kind of fed my history interest, but then it opened up this whole market stuff. And this would have been coinciding when the bull market and and the stock market was going on and some movies that were hitting like Wall Street. So I started peeking this, what's this all about?
Yeah.
And kind of led me down. I took a business class and the rest is history, I guess.
I think it's pretty common in the fabric of our lives that we'll have these, I mean, you call it serendipity or chance or luck or whatever you want to call it, but I just call it kind of like destiny, where you know, you're having a professor that is not really in your major. I'm assuming based on what you said just now that econ was probably an elective, right? So you're taking this class and a guy says something and these things are going on in the world apart from this class. And, you know, you're connecting the dots and it's just like, wow, how all that stuff comes together. I love that story. And I don't know that it's too different than how a aspiring financial professional, whether they be in undergrad and going through the education part or a career changer that has, you know, dabbled in personal finance or wants to know about it or is hearing about things like cryptocurrency. And they're like, what this inflation thing? Like, what's going on? And then all of a sudden they take one of your classes and they're like, I'm hooked. So I'm glad to hear that. Like, have you had, you know, kind of students kind of tell you those stories over time and like the impact that, you know, running across you or taking your class or being exposed to what you teach has done for their careers?
Yeah. So I guess two things jump out. So the very first year, no, it was actually prior to the year that we were registered. So our program was first registered in August of 2018. So the 2019 students were the first crop to come out. But this would have been in 2018 where a student had come to me and said, I'm so happy I found this. Because she goes, I'm a finance major, but derivatives or international finance, it just doesn't stoke up that passion. But working with people, helping them, you know, come up with a game plan for their future, positioning themselves, the interpersonal side, that just feeds who I am and what I want to do. So I was like, wow, okay, I'm glad that I'm, you know, I helped you find, you know, maybe your best home. And then last year, there was a student at graduation came up to me and said, you know, you always hear these stories of the quote-unquote professor that helped, I wouldn't say change your life, but at least guided you down. And this one that you'll always remember, he goes, that's you. And I was like, wow, that's the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me. So
those are the rewards of working in this industry, whether you're practicing it as a, you know, as a provider of financial services or if you're, you know, teaching it, right? And I think it's kind of interesting, those rewards, because of how, I have to use this term, like how sacred a seat we sit in as, you know, these guides. I love that term that you use for people that we help. I wonder if there's something, a phrase you said, I was going to ask you a question, but there's a phrase you said that intrigued me, which is you said, I'm glad I helped you find your home, right? Which kind of speaks to purpose. I wonder if you can elaborate on that a little bit, because, you know, let's say, and I don't know when people start taking your classes, but, you know, the average incoming freshman, maybe even sophomore, probably won't be doing a whole lot in their major probably until later on in their academic career. And, you know, you're going through the motions, like you're getting your syllabus and you got 15 or 16 or 17 or whatever credit hours, and you're just going through this and you can't really make sense of it maybe because there's no practicum. Maybe you are fortunate enough to get an internship or something like that during your time. I wonder how often from academia do you specifically maybe speak about purpose and finding their why in this whole minutia of information when it comes to this industry?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, it's interesting. So we are fortunate. I think a lot of the academic programs throughout the country do have student groups. So we, within the Broad College, we have a group called the Wealth Management Association. So it's a student organization. So it's the students running it. And I think freshmen and sophomores will get some exposure. So let's say if you stumble on it, some people are very purposeful or they kind of know that's what I want to do. Others will literally, you know, we'll stumble in from the standpoint of a friend or someone will make some recommendations to come in. So there's a group of students that will find themselves. And I'll have students come in and saying, I really want to go into wealth management because, and it's and you can tell that they have thought through it. And then others will take our intro class as just like, oh, I've heard about this. And then afterwards saying, I didn't know this was a career. I didn't know this was a profession. And that's even different than maybe the third group of people who will say, I've heard about this as a career, but I thought it's just sales. And I know it's so much more than sales. And so I think that as the profession evolves and the jobs that we hire young people to do evolve, that we're going to be able to capture, I think, a whole host of new people to come in, different backgrounds, different perspectives, which I think gives me a lot of excitement for what we're going to look like and what we're going to do in the next 20, 30 years.
Yeah. I think that's a very keen observation in that, you know, we talk about this and there are, you know, all the, let's call it the Hollywood sensationalized versions of this. Some really great movies, you know, that I enjoy and probably a lot of people enjoy, but the reality of this day to day is definitely not that. And
so it's not Boiler Room, right?
No, it's not Boiler Room. It may be a little bit more Pursuit of Happiness, but still, you know, it's one of those things where everything's not sales. But I think the point I'm trying to make here is that it's a relatively new industry, right? We're not as old as even accounting or medicine or law or any of those things. And the evolution, really, really great word you use, of this career, of this arc of how more people find out about it. You know, they bring all their skills, the mosaic of their life and their experiences and, you know, knowledge and all this other kind of stuff to the industry. And that only adds on. And I was just saying this to the other day to a guest, is that it would be very interesting. I'd be curious to see, you know, I know a little bit about project management and, you know, things like Scrum and these different ways to work through really, really complex problems with a, you know, let's say a really tested empirical design for project management. It would be very interesting to see how some of those disciplines and crossover from other professions apply to financial planning. Like, I just think we're so young that no one has even, like, you know, been in project management for 20 years or something like that. And then they say, I want to be a financial planner. And they're like, why are you guys doing things like this? You could do this. You know, I'm eager to see those type of things happen inside the industry. And as well as I'm pretty sure that your students are too.
No, absolutely. You know, it's interesting when you say the whole project management, I think, and outside of my Michigan State time, I am a founder of a RIA in our town. And so I spend 10% of my time maybe, but as I add a little bit to the firm, it is one of these things I'm sure all the listeners that are advisors can probably attest to, is that each of our clients kind of is a little project, right? And when they all bubble up and we have all of our to-do lists, like how we struggle with this, like, how do we keep a unified list of all of the evolving to-dos with each of our clients, and how do we manage it? And, yes. And when you said project management, it got me thinking, like, yeah, there's a, you know, there's this master to-do list that exists, and how we all collectively in our profession handle them, and it's probably all different, right?
Yeah, and there's been a whole industry, a financial software industry that's, you know, kind of been codified around all the things that advisors need, from turnkey asset management programs all the way down to, you know, little softwares that you can buy as a solo practitioner. And I would say they are all at some point missing something. I know everybody goes, no, we're the one-stop shop. But, you know, since it is so, at least with my firm, the solutions are so customized and individualized, even if you have a template for the type of people you work with, like a niche, it's still, like you said, everybody's their own little project. And to that extent, I don't know if there ever will be a perfect software or a perfect solution, but you raise a lot of great points that someone looking at it inside the industry will probably not have the perspective as someone that has been doing project management for years and years and years and years and realizes, you know, the essence of how things can be streamlined and things like that. So excellent point. I wholeheartedly agree with you on that. Let's pivot a little bit. I want to kind of dive into some of the things that a next generation financial planner would need to have. And anybody looking at the title of this is going to look at your credentials, the CFA, very highly regarded credential inside the wealth management space. I would argue, many probably would agree with me, that it's more for investment planning and money management, institutional money management at that. Okay, real quick. Have you had trouble finding resources during your journey to become a financial professional? I mean, have you wondered Is there somewhere I can just find all the information and, you know, the inside scoop that I need? If you've been wondering how to avoid all the pitfalls of bad advice, including wasted time and money, I want to invite you to join us in the Jumpstart community. What is the Jumpstart community, Dominic? Well, I'm glad you asked. It's a place where we're bringing together like-minded individuals who are dedicated not only to finding their place in financial services, but actually growing their careers and striving for greatness so that together we can change lives and become the superheroes of the financial services industry. Look, I know that's a big, big, big ask, but if that sounds like something you'd be interested in, then make sure you visit us at www.jumpstartcoachinglab.com. That's www.jumpstartcoachinglab.com, and we'd love to have you. Okay, now let's get back to the conversation. But when you start to think about the different credentials out there, what's available for people? And maybe not just credentials, you can broaden your answer on this, but like what are maybe three things that you are telling your future financial professionals that they really need in order to be successful in this industry going forward?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, it's interesting in the classroom, and I guess all different types of majors and professions might have this, but we definitely do, you know, in order to kind of get through the CFP requirements. So the CFP kind of lays out a list of learning objectives that each of the programs need to make sure that they provide to students.
Yeah. And so the knowledge topics.
The knowledge topics, that the like kind of the technical skills.
Yep.
Where, you know, like estate planning, retirement planning, and tax planning, and on and on. And oftentimes, and I hear this from even firms that come in to hire students, where, you know, they're saying, okay, we're making the assumption that either you have learned this, you've been exposed to it, and even if you've only been exposed to it, that you have the capacity in order to, like, fill in the knowledge gaps that we all have. We're always filling in knowledge gaps, but it's more of like, boy, what's the other part that you bring to it, the person that you can bring to the profession? And so it's amazing the different words that come that people will use. But, you know, when I share with students, I'm like, you know, one of the things that I find so fascinating and awesome about our profession is that as we're working with others, you know, the things that hopefully people can bring to the table or can get better at would be like our communication skills, and both from our ability to write, but more importantly, our ability to talk and communicate with each other. So it's whether over the phone, and I do hear that the next generation, that's something that they need improvement on. So I keep telling them, you know, these phone skills, you know, not everything is still done with
text.
In
what way? Because you would think that since, you know, at least anybody born after, let's call it 1997, their world has largely been digitized. So what particular skills are you referring to?
Yeah. The phone skills, they are masterful with texting each other. And now they text maybe not.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good point. So text is different than actual voice.
Voice.
Over the phone. Yeah. Okay.
And in fact,
I like that distinction that you're right.
Yes. Yeah. And so even in our office, we have a junior member of the team. Awesome. Super smart. But there was a miscommunication between my partner, you know, who had said, like, did you speak with, you know, Mr. Jones? Let's call a client Mr. Jones. Yes. And then later on, the client said, I never heard from, you know, never heard from your staff member.
And I know where this is going.
Yeah. And it was like, hey, did you have that conversation? I texted him.
Calling, that is so, you know, funny, like, because texting is in the lexicon of communication for anybody.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think it might have been, you know, using not the exact, did you call and speak on your phone? And it was like the assumption, like, oh, I would never have thought that I would say texting is its own domain. But with our young people, I think they view it as like, hey, however, whatever it means. So it is literally, I mean, there's some things of how you answer the phone, how you greet the phone, the energy that you bring. I mean, you know, and this is, I give this message for the students who are looking for jobs. So the employer that's potentially hiring, or that they're potentially calling you to, you know, start an interview or set up an interview, you know, you got to bring some energy to it. And so I think that's something that, you know, with anything else, you know, they're going to learn. And then even in meetings, and I even think back of myself, like early on, you know, you go into a meeting and you'd say, here's my agenda or here's my slide deck. Yeah. And I'm going to go through slide 1 through 10, regardless if that other person that I'm speaking to have literally fallen asleep sitting there, you know, and is your ability to identify, take those cues in and say, I got a course correct, right? Yeah. I'm not going to get to slide 8, 9, 10 because it's not important to them. They've checked out.
The ability to read the room. You said social cues. Those are huge. And so those are huge.
Yeah. Those are things that either you already have or you need to get.
Yeah.
And then, you know, then probably the two other ones that come to mind, and it's, you know, sometimes difficult to like how to put the right words in, but I kind of wrote down like caring and being patient, which leads
empathy.
To trust.
I like the word. Empathy probably encompasses that, yeah.
Yeah, and actually I kind of let empathy almost be its own category because, boy, you know, you think about the times when we have those hard discussions with someone where either a client, the issue is maybe the family doesn't earn enough money or the family's spending too much money, which then prevents them to save and hit all these goals. Like, how do we encapsulate that in a recommendation without – being judgmental, right? And I think that's your point, like how, and so that empathy part, and I always tell the students, like, I'm going to, and I know there are people out there that probably have great exercises, but I still struggle, like, okay, what's an exercise to be able to teach empathy other than we're going to keep using that word and we're going to continue to give examples and then hopefully collectively we all learn. So,
I think you're onto something here. I want to double click on this because I think empathy, this whole thought, whenever it's spoken about, I think largely about this because I've had a lot of conversations around this in behavioral finance in a whole. I don't think it gets defined enough to be quite honest. And I think you're doing a good job to kind of take the layer beneath the layer when we talk about that, because there's a lot of words that come to mind when I think about exercising or having empathy in a particular conversation with a client to avoid some of the things you're saying, like not being judgmental. Well, that takes some thoughtfulness and some care and some tact. You know, some things, to be quite honest, depending on your upbringing. I know I was one of these as the oldest of the military family. Like, I had no tact. You know, it was just like straight, you know, black and white. And I would say things a lot of times that people would get offended by. And I was like, well, it's the truth. You know, you take it as it is, you know, that kind of thing. But to your point, I think there is a level of decorum and even discernment, right? Like, and to be honest, some of these things, I think unless you have an apprenticeship type of upbringing in this industry, you will probably make a lot of those mistakes, and therefore you would have to rely on experience being your teacher. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think of myself, like I got in the industry, so I pivoted from commercial banking into wealth management in August of 1999. So I saw the last 6 months of this historic bull market, and then got to unfortunately sit, you know, and witness the next 3 years of a pretty dismal continued downturn, and seeing. And so I, at the front end of the downturn, I really didn't have clients. I would be brought in more as the investment quote unquote expert, for whatever that means. But it was like trying to make sense of all this, and you would see, you know, depending on the person, right, you'd see to some people almost despair, like, you know, I've given up in the how. And so your analytical side of the brain would be like, let me start throwing numbers and, you know, and charts at you. And almost through, I guess, experience, to your point, you learn it's not probably so much, it's not that part of the brain, it's the part of the emotion side of the brain that someone is wrestling with.
Yeah.
And I guess anything I can do in the classroom to help someone maybe avoid a few of those stumbling blocks that we all go through, right? Yeah. We just don't know how we handle that some of these life situations that part of our job is to work with people on, you know, to say, you know, if anything, if I can share a story or two of a situation, maybe that's sitting in someone's brain when they're faced with it. It's never the exact, but at least like, maybe how to navigate through.
I agree. I've said many times to aspiring financial professionals, you know, it's very hard to be prepared for that client interaction, that first client interaction where, you know, there's a death in their family or there's a divorce or job loss, you know, all these really big, heavy things. And sometimes, you know, I've been doing this for 20 years now. It's what I've learned is sometimes just very objective silence is necessary. It, you know, it's something like, man, you know, that I feel for you. That's got to be terrible. How are you doing? Like, it's like, I don't need any of my book knowledge or my degrees or anything for that. Like, I just, and I say this often, just be human. Like, if this was your mother or your father or your sister or any of your relatives feeling like this, how would you react? Clients, I think, really appreciate that. And I think that's a skill that the coming generation, I think, really needs to know, because as you know, personal finance is so much more personal than finance, right? It is not so much about the numbers. It's about how we feel about those numbers. So, no, I'm really glad that we're having this. Like, let me ask you this. What is your advice to students when, you know, let's just say you're getting to senior year and you may or may not have internships. Maybe you didn't have anything that you liked particularly. And you're still kind of like out on the precipice, kind of be like, you know I want to do financial planning. I just kind of haven't put my finger on it. And then all of a sudden you get this opportunity to kind of go work for a big wirehouse or something like that, or a big broker dealer. Not ideal, but what are your thoughts about how you get started in the industry? Because as you know, everybody starts with probably a somewhat unglamorous beginning. And I talk to so many younger in this industry, not necessarily young in age, but just young in this industry, where they're like, no, I want to work for a fee only IRA and I want to be doing financial planning every day and I want to be doing financial plans from day one. Like, maybe kind of speak to that a little bit and what your advice is to students.
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, it is interesting when I think about the number of students that I've had in the program up to this point. You know, there has definitely been a wide span. There has been some students that have come in and will say right away, I mean, they know what they want. I remember one student came in, he knew he wanted to work for Plante Moran, which is a regional accounting firm that's in our market. They have a large wealth management practice. So he almost as a junior, like, this is who I want to work for. And he could articulate to you exactly why this was the right firm for him. And then you got students that kind of move through down that hierarchy to the other side that says, like, I think I want to do this. I just don't know, you know, to what degree and exactly, you know, with whom I want to do it with. So, yeah, you know, it was a couple of years ago. I had a couple members of the AGC join my class one day virtually. And there was a student who had asked a question that said, yeah, I came back with an interview with a wirehouse, and it was a position that was going to be like 2 years, kind of, let's say, salary, with the idea that you would then, after that 2 year period, kind of move into more of a producer role.
Yep.
And he says, man, that's not really me, you know, but he goes, I got to get started someplace. And even there, from the recommendation, you know, one of the advisors had said, hey, you know what? This is a recognizable firm. You're going to learn a lot. I would do it because we don't know what 2 years, you know, from now to 2 years, a lot of can change.
It's a long time in this industry.
It's a long time. Yeah. Like, learn, absorb. And you know what? Pivoting is not, you know, we all some degree do that. And then the other advisor had said, nope, it's not a fit right from the beginning. If it doesn't fit what you want, I would keep looking. And I was sitting here going, and that didn't really answer the question. It just gave this particular person two completely polar opposite things to think about. But I was like, you know, they each kind of have their element to it. So, you know, I think to a student or a person that's trying to get in the industry, oftentimes it's like, if I can get into a firm that's going to A, teach me, B, you know, sometimes this is hard to figure out, but like, do they really care about their clients? You know, I mean, if they truly, you know, whether it's whether it's BD, Wirehouse, or RIA, but I mean, do they really, at the end of the day, you know, is it in their culture to take care of them, or is it just like, we're just trying to sell a product regardless if it fits or not? I think then you can learn from there, and then, you know, hopefully from there, you know, either you found a home or you know that you'll have to keep looking to find the right place.
Yeah, yeah. And I agree with you. I think I've often been quoted as saying, it doesn't matter how you start, just get started. I do think there's a personal, ethical, and moral line that you can't cross. And this is, again, a personal decision, because what ends up happening is these internal conflicts end up destroying your career more than anything. Then the product you sell or the place you work for, is just that if you just really don't feel that this is you, and let's just use an extreme example, you can't sell index annuities to 90-year-old grandmas, you just can't do it, then don't do it. So you shouldn't. I mean, no matter what the pay and all that kind of stuff is. I want to also kind of highlight some of the things that you guys are doing here. Okay, so we keep on mentioning AGC. So this is the Advisor Growth Community with Justin Connelly and I can't remember the other guy's name.
Taylor Schultz.
Yeah. So lots of great minds inside of this community. Matter of fact, I've had some of these people as guests on my podcast. I think what you're doing is – it's not necessarily revolutionary, but it is definitely a benefit to the, what I would call the ethos, what creates the fabric of what allows the next generation to be successful, right? So think of one prong, in my mind, I think of one prong as the education, the book part, the technical stuff that you're going to have to learn. And then there's even a layer to that, because you're not going to learn a lot of the stuff that, you know, you're not going to learn all the technicals through the books. Let's just put it that way. And then there's this relational networking component I think you have to start to use to groom your skills, you know, learning industry vernacular, because just like any other industry, we have our own slang and our own lingo and all that kind of stuff, right, that you have to learn. And I believe your partnership with AGC is a really great way for students to get that. And it, you know, obviously probably introduces, you know, job opportunities. And then if there's a third prong, there's this, you know, personal development part, right, that they have to have agency over as far as their developed thing. We call them soft skills, but for lack of a better term, soft skills, the communication, the etiquette on the phone, if you ever get back to that kind of thing, you know, all those things. And I love what you're doing. Talk about the program a little bit. Because I wrote down some stuff here, and I don't know if I wrote it down wrong or not, but placing 80% of students in independent jobs, like that's huge. That is huge. That's for every 10 students coming through the program, 8 of them are getting placed in the financial services industry. So what do you think you guys are doing different, maybe in addition to some of the things that I already named?
Yeah, so the program started. So the graduating class of 2019 was our very first group of students. The first 3 years, we just provided a program, which is just a loose marketing term for me to help sell this program to students and then to sell the program to employers. The last 2 years, we've had a minor. So just for context, we started our very first year, we had 16 students, all seniors. This year, we have 49 seniors and we have 7 master's students. And so we have seen pretty phenomenal growth from that, which is really, I think, a testament to young people's interest in our profession. But that interest then, because of the placement, has been kind of it's a really cool, it's a real cool profession. And then there are jobs there at the end. And so early on, when I was coming across some of the data that was like, okay, depending on, you know, which data source, but it was like, okay, maybe anywhere from like a quarter to a third of advisors may be retiring or reaching retirement age in the next 10 years. This provides a bunch of great opportunities for students. You know, in the program, it has really been both, you know, the students having an interest in the profession for one, and then the firms, you know, having the need in order to hire the students. And so, you know, I think that has been kind of the underpinning of, you know, for the opportunity. So fortunately, you know, between, you know, reaching out to employers, kind of telling our story, being part of the AGC, having some, you know, very, very important strategic partners, strategic firms, you know, with, you know, kind of with our program, you know, has given the opportunity for students to reach these jobs. Yeah. I would say out of the students that have went in to the profession, the vast majority are finding their ways into, you know, RIA in one form or fashion. If I had to roughly guess, probably about 20% are kind of going into the sales/book building type of occupation, whether it's in a warehouse or it's an independent type of environment. So I think the majority of them are getting put into teams where they're kind of learning the profession from the ground floor, you know, operations, how to open an account, sitting in a meeting, observing, learning. And I just feel right now it's going to make for a better advisor as they get older and they mature, you know, and it's not necessarily so much like, you know, how do I keep an income stream coming in?
Let me ask you something right quick, because you bring up something. This is like three distinct paths there. You know, you got the straight RIA, which is going to be pretty much an employer structure, however they got obtained that. Then you got the BD warehouse, which at this point in 2022 is still the large majority of, let's call it, seats left on the bus, right? Like those have the most amount of jobs available on an annual basis. And then you get these, maybe they fall into this category too, right? And I know what you're talking about, where these firms have, you know, larger size client base, so therefore the infrastructure is a little bit bigger, and they have distinct functions like operations and trading and compliance and marketing and all these different things, and people can kind of rotate through all those to see what do I like most, and, you know, get exposed to all these different things. And you made an observation, I don't know, you know, if this was intentional or not, but were you saying that that last opportunity set of rotating through teams kind of give people a more well-rounded view of this industry and maybe allow them to kind of mature in a better pathway, more optimal pathway, if you will?
It probably really depends on the firm, because I guess looking at it, you know, without thinking of, you know, anyone in particular, seeing all the different functions within a firm is just going to make someone more well-rounded.
Yeah.
But as I think through it, there are smaller firms that the principals and the senior advisors, they almost create that ad hoc, and
that's
they
true.
Give that same experience, even though it's not defined in the way that we, maybe the way that you and I are kind of thinking about it, where it's like, I will spend 6 months in ops and I will spend 6 months with the investment team. But, you know, I've seen students have come back, even if it's a one or two person shop, but they have really been pretty thoughtful in the experience for the students, and they kind of pick that up, but it's not as defined. So it's, you know, so
no, like, I can see that. I'm glad you brought that out, Stephen. I think that's a good, it's a trade-off, right? Like sometimes you have the more defined path with a larger firm and you know exactly where you're going to be, you know exactly what the rotation is going to be, yada, yada, yada. And then you have these more kind of like fly by the seat of your pants sometimes, guerrilla warfare, but you learn a lot, right? It may not be as, the certainty may not be there for you as to what you're going to do, but you're going to learn a lot. And I think the upside potential there is probably huge too, because of, you know, that trade-off. At least it's mm-hmm. been that way in my profession too, or in my career path.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So what are some obstacles that students are kind of maybe facing now that you would, I think that would pertain to this audience, that this wide audience, whether you're a career changer, aspiring financial professional, student, whatever, what do you say some of these, I guess, maybe generic, without getting too specific, with some generic obstacles that people are facing that, that's kind of like, you know, I don't know. I would say, you know, this is just part of the game. And then they're just kind of wrapping their head around how financial services work. And maybe they see it as a really big thing, but we're like, no, that everybody has to go through that.
So let me take this more from a student in undergrad, thinking about going into our profession. So probably some of the obstacles as far as like landing a position would be is that they can't ask the clear or they can't articulate the clear why. Like why do I want to go into this role? Why do I want to be part of this profession? Why do I want to join your firm? And so I try to continue to reemphasize with students that maybe unlike when we were younger, they have the opposite issue where information is not an issue. It's like, how do I, you know, take the time to try to understand the fabric of that business so that when you're talking to that principal, that owner, the hiring person, that it can be pretty clear, like, I know you and I know why it fit. So that's an obstacle. And some students, some young people do a great job at that, and they can clearly identify their, and like, why they're a great fit. And others, you know, probably the most extreme example would be more of a student where wants to apply every single job. I always kind of refer to that to like the kind of the shotgun approach, where if there's 20 opportunities, they want to take all of them, but they really can't. There's not a clear articulation of why. And then I think, regardless if it's a young person or even a career changer, once getting into the firm, then is, you know, how do I quickly understand how that business operates, and so that I can make myself, you know, as much of an add to the business as possible. And some I think do a great job in understanding like, how do I fit and balance all the needs? And then, you know, again, depending on the business, there's maybe sometimes a struggle to figure out, you know, how do I become a, you know, an important part of the overall team and the makeup.
As an aspiring financial professional or career changer, I understand you have a lot on your plate, right? If you're not in classes or studying for a licensing exam or listening to a really cool podcast or attending a conference, you're always doing something, trying to better yourself on this journey, right? Have you ever thought, I really wish there was a place I could be understood, a place where I could find my tribe and kind of talk about all the things that are going on with me during this journey? Well, there is such a place, my friend. It is the Jumpstart Community Roundup. Twice a month, you get the opportunity to share your wins, your losses, and basically whatever you need help with. It's a chance to kind of get encouragement and find accountability on your journey. And this is all included in your membership to the Jumpstart Community. All you have to do is visit www.jumpstartcoachinglab for more information and to sign up. We'd love to hear your story and have you join us in this wonderful community of aspiring financial professionals. Okay, let's get back to the conversation. All right, so you bring some interesting points that I articulate with aspiring financial professionals all the time about this whole pathway. And I think people have to really get over in their mind some of the things that, like you said, when we were younger, we didn't have to really worry about that. There was not a whole lot of information. Right now, you're like inundated with information. And I think sometimes some of the things that you said, I even heard Chloe Moore talk about this, who was one of the co-founders of the BLX internship, in that she got really specific about what she wanted, where she wanted to work, even geographically, the type of work she wanted to do, which speaks to a lot of things, speaks to how much research she did to know what type of work she wanted to do, and even, you know, where that wanted to be. And that narrowed focus actually helped her secure an opportunity a lot quicker than she probably would have otherwise done versus the shotgun approach that you just talked about. Because I think sometimes, you know, if I'm sitting across the table from, you know, someone that wants to join my firm, and I'm listening to them articulate like why they want to be in the industry, in the back of my mind, I'm listening to them, but I'm also thinking about, okay, how would this person be with my clients? And I'm going through all my client scenarios and things like that, and how much I care about my clients. I'm looking for things that are going to be attractive to me and, like you said, add value and be an asset to my firm. You can't know that about me unless you've done some study about the industry and probably my firm. Like, you do really good to get my firm brochure, read through my ADV, you know, get on my website, like maybe watch some video. Like, you do really well to do all those things. And you can't do that for 20 firms. Not over a short period of time.
No.
It would take you some time. So
yeah.
I love your point about getting focus and finding what you want to do, because that helps so much. And And we've already kind of talked about some tools in order to do that. I think it's really, really important to develop these external relationships with industry participants, even while you're in your academic career, to get exposure, maybe attending conferences or volunteering. All these are different ways to kind of overlap and intersect in the industry so that you can find out about what you want to do. I really love that you're mentioning that.
Yeah, because we, you know, and there's more that we can do, but just as an example, so a group of our students are involved in there's a next gen organization that is Carson and BlackRock came together. And so the students the last couple of years have been able to go to the Carson conference, and they come back from this conference. Now, I've never been to the conference, but again, it was probably, it's kind of a typical conference in this, but they come back energized about, yeah. Oh, wow, this is cool. And then we were, for a couple of years, were able to go to the Schwab Impact Conference pre-COVID in the same way. So I was there, and you could just see the students, whether they were Michigan State students or they were students from, you know, University of Toledo or Texas Tech, you name the school, yeah. But the young people, you can tell that they are energized being around all of us, like as professionals. And so that's just a great opportunity. And the AGC mentorship program that we put together, where students interacting and, like, to your point, creating that networking, learning from, you know, those that have come before them about the profession and what we do and things that we do well and things that we can get better at.
Yeah,
and so, yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. As we bring this in for a landing, you know, this is a podcast to empower tomorrow's financial professional with tools to serve their client at the next level. In that context, what word or words of wisdom would you want to leave with the audience, Stephen?
Yeah, so on that part, I always say, and this is maybe more my introduction to it, is that, you know, if you want to be a teacher, or I know earlier we used a word like guide or educator or coach with others to help them with these decisions, then this is probably going to be a great career for you. If instead you're more interested, which is nothing wrong, but if you're more interested in building a valuation model in Excel and tearing through 10Ks, then that, you know, then you have to find your home there. And because this is a career that we're interacting, right? I mean, I can be the greatest of, you know, the best of the best with my software, but if I can't do anything with it, you know, or if I can't have a conversation with another person that software with the recommendations leads to anything, you know, anything impactful.
Yeah.
What's the point? Yeah. So.
No, I wholeheartedly agree with that. This is definitely a people person. At least when we talk about a lot of what people are aspiring to be when they say financial professional, which is the kind of the client-facing, front-facing role where you're interacting and you're cultivating and nurturing the relationship along the way, you have to spend a fair amount of time developing those interpersonal skills that are going to allow you to use the technical knowledge in the right context throughout the relationship. Because that's the point, right? You know, that's the real difference between just having knowledge and or intelligence, but then wisdom, right? Like, wisdom is knowing when to apply certain bits of knowledge or smarts or intelligence that you have in a specific situation. And
absolutely,
that is the part that is extremely difficult. Like, I still screw it up now, you know? it's one of those things. Now, I'm probably better than I was 20 years ago, definitely, but it's an evolution, definitely. So, it's great.
Yeah, and I'm sure all the listeners will even agree is that, you know, we're always learning, right?
Yeah.
We're not perfect. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, we're striving with either technical knowledge, because to your point earlier, it's impossible to know everything.
Yeah.
So you always have to have a natural curiosity to you. But boy, even, you know, you run into a very sensitive conversation with a client and you'll look back later going, oh, I feel very good how that went. Or it's like, oh man, next time.
Yeah, exactly.
Next time I'm striking. Yeah. And it's like, sometimes it's just a mother of experience that gets us there, you know?
Yeah. I love it. I love it, man. I really enjoyed our conversation. I really applaud the work that you're doing at Michigan State. I think the students and the faculty, for that matter, are the better for having you there and what you bring to the industry and preparing the pipeline for the planner of tomorrow. So definitely hats off to you. Appreciate you, man.
Yeah, I so appreciate it. Thank you.
I really hope you enjoy this conversation. Before we go, just a few things. The best way to retain what you just learned is to do more than just listen. You first might want to write down your most important takeaway and then give yourself a deadline to apply. For bonus points, you might also let someone hold you accountable to that deadline. And remember, the only way more people will know about this podcast is if you share it. You can do that by sharing a link to this episode on your social media or by leaving a review on iTunes so that it reaches a wider audience. I'd appreciate it if you took the time to do either or both. And finally, if you'd like to learn more about how Jumpstart can help you become a next generation financial professional or partner with you in finding next generation talent for your organization, send us an email at hello@jumpstartcoachinglab.com, just in case you needed to get a pen to write that down. That's hello@jumpstartcoachinglab.com. Bye for now, until our next conversation.